Hey, this is Scott Love on the Melt Talk podcast. Joining me today is Danielle Taylor and Nakia Gray. Welcome to both of you today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
And Danielle, tell us about the diversity report. Tell us about your role in research. Let's talk about that for a little bit. And then, Nakia, I'd like to kind of hear about some of the history of the diversity report.
Right. So I oversee all of NALP's research at NALP, and I've been here about 6 years, and I work in partnership with Oksana Polis, who is our research analyst at NALP. And the diversity report is one of those signature reports that I would say in terms of NALP's research. It's one of those reports that people are always looking for each year. And we've been putting out these data now for nearly 35 years in terms of tracking demographics when it comes to lawyers working in law firms, as well as summer associates.
That's great. Thank you, Danielle. And Nakia, tell us about the history that NALP has with this report, what they've tracked, and also why it's so important to NALP's mission.
Yeah. So this report is really central to what we do here at NALP, and it really goes back to our founding. So NALP was founded over 50 years ago, and it was founded at a time in the legal industry when there was, you know, rampant racism and sexism and really every type of ism you can think of, right? And if you were, for example, Black or a woman or Jewish, there were simply jobs in the industry you could not obtain. And NALP was founded in response to that. It was founded because of this fundamental belief that all law students and lawyers should have an equal opportunity to obtain any job in the industry and succeed at that job, right? And that's a belief we stand by today. NALP's research is a critical piece of that because it tells us how far the industry has come and how far it has to go to achieve that goal. You know, Scott, when it's one thing for Danielle and I to talk about disparities and to say they still exist. It's another thing to have data that is irrefutable and shows exactly how large those disparities are and how they're manifesting. That information allows our members in the industry to make informed, fact-based decisions and to determine the effectiveness of those decisions. So it's really critical to who we are at NALP and critical to the industry as it continues to struggle with diversity.
Well, thank you, Nakia. And let's talk about what that means right now on the national stage. Over the past year, we've seen strong anti-DEI movements emerge. And when President Trump took office in January, one of the first things he did was issue a number of anti-DEI executive orders, including orders that direct higher education institutions like law schools to cease all illegal DEI, quote unquote. A few days ago, the EEOC issued letters to dozens of law firms asking for information about their diversity efforts, particularly as it relates to hiring and promotions. So, Nakia, what is NALP's position with all of this?
You know, Scott, we have this value statement at NALP that's in all of the team signatures. It's in my signature, it's in Danielle's signature, and it goes on many of the things we publish. And it says, NALP believes in fairness, facts, and the power of a diverse community. And over the past few weeks, I keep finding myself coming back to that value statement as I've been making decisions, as it's really core to who we are as an organization. And it's really shaped my thinking about what's happening in this moment. The legal industry is not yet an industry where all talent has an opportunity to thrive, right? NALP's research shows that there continues to be significant disparities in the employment outcomes for graduates of color. And as Danielle will talk about in a minute, in the representation of lawyers of color at law firms. And the attacks that are happening on diversity, equity, inclusion work that we've seen over the last few weeks threatens the fragile progress that the industry has made to date. The fact is, the vast majority of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are lawful, and the courts have recognized that many, many times over the years. These programs help employers meet the obligations in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which places these affirmative obligations on employers to ensure their workplaces are free from discrimination. You know, in fact, that fulfilling that mandate is precisely the reason why law firms create these programs in the first place, as they help prevent discrimination and create these safe workplaces where everyone can thrive. So in terms of what position NALP is taking, we stand firm in our belief in fairness, facts, and the power of diverse communities. So we're going to stay focused on our mission. And that means we're going to continue to support our members in meeting all of the challenges that are happening right now, whether that's the backlash to diversity initiatives, whether it's trying to advise students who maybe had their job offers rescinded because of the federal government hiring freeze, or any number of things that are happening right now. And we're going to continue to provide them with the information and resources resources they need to support the law students and lawyers who depend on them. And we're going to continue to strive for a legal profession where every law student and lawyer has an equal opportunity to obtain any job in the industry and thrive at that job.
So, Nikaya, NALP gets the information for its report from the data law firms enter in the NALP Directory of Legal Employers. Do you think all law firms will continue to provide that information?
You know, I really hope so, Scott. I'll emphasize here that, yes, that is where we get the information for this survey. And yes, it's critical to NALP's research. And we certainly hope firms will continue to provide demographic information for that reason. But that's not the only reason that they should be doing it. It's also a critical recruiting tool for them. And it's going to become more critical for attracting talent as we continue to see employers trying to scrub any hint of diversity from their websites and other external content, right, which we're seeing right now. It's important to remember when we're talking about recruiting that diversity and inclusivity is a core value of Gen Z, which is the generation graduating right now. They expect to see diversity and inclusion in the workplace. And it's more than just a buzzword to this generation. It's a fundamental expectation. And this generation is going to only apply to and accept offers from employers that they think align with their values. And that's where the directory can help legal employers right now. You know, we conducted this market research study recently, and law students ranked the NALP Directory of Legal Employers as one of their top resources they use when they're researching law firms. And so I'd encourage firms to think about including that demographic information in their directory profiles as perhaps a more palatable way in the current climate to signal to candidates that they do, in fact, have a diverse and inclusive workplace, particularly if they don't feel that they can continue to directly say that on their websites anymore.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. That's fantastic. And Danielle, let's kind of get into the research. What were some of the specifics that you saw in this year's diversity report and some of the key takeaways?
So I think for any of our regular readers of this report, the storyline this year is probably a very familiar one. We did see record levels of representation in many areas for women and people of color and LGBTQ lawyers, but the figures don't move that much from year to year. Usually it's very slow, incremental progress, and that was true for the most part this year as well. So, for example, if we start with the associate data, we were at record levels of representation when it comes to both women and people of color. Last year in the 2023 report, we were really excited to announce that for the first time, women made up more than half of all associates. And that representation continued to increase this year. Now that's closer to about 52%, and associates of color now representing about 31% of all associates. In the partnership ranks, there is also positive progress this year as well, but I would be remiss if I did not mention that both women and people of color are still significantly underrepresented at the partnership level. These figures are much, much smaller compared to the associate figures. 29% of all partners are women. That's also a record high. And 13% are people of color. This year, for the first time ever, women of color crossed that 5% threshold, which is still a very tiny number. And within the equity partner ranks, these percentages are even smaller. Only about a quarter of equity partners are women. About 10% are people of color. For summer associates, the story's a little bit different this year. So overall, there was record representation when it came to summer associates of color at 43%. But women, for the first time in more than a decade, there was a decline in their representation within the summer associate data. They still represent about 55% of summer associates, and that's pretty much on par with their representation in terms of law students. So I would caution against reading too much into that drop this year until we see at least one more year of data. But there's certainly a lot to dig into in terms of this year's report.
That's great. What surprised you the most, Danielle?
So I'd say, for the most part, there's not a lot that surprises me in these data from year to year, because usually the figures move very slowly from year to year. So usually we don't see a very large increase or decrease within the data. One area that I think might be surprising to readers is that In recent years, we've been seeing an increase in the percentage of lawyers who identify as having a disability. We've been tracking that data for a long time. And for a number of years, those percentages were super tiny, about a third of a percentage point, about a half of a percentage point. This year, that figure was about 2.5%, which is still really tiny, is probably grossly underrepresented in terms of what that true figure might be. But I think with that increasing figure, that may show that there is a bit more comfortability with disclosing that, at least at some law firms.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. Now, Nakaya, you've been quoted before as describing the process law firms are making at the partnership level as abysmal. Tell me about why you said that, Nakaya.
Yeah, it's really because of how little and how slow that progress has been. As Danielle mentioned, the representation of partners of color increased very little this year by 0.7 percentage point, which actually historically is a very large year-to-year gain, right, for this cohort, matching this record-setting gain that we saw back in 2018. But the representation still lags behind associates of color by nearly 20 percentage points. And that tells us that lawyers of color convert from associate to partner at far lower rates than their white counterparts. But let me put that into perspective for you, Scott, and for our listeners, because I know it's sometimes hard when Danielle and I are throwing around percentage points and year over year gain to know what that means in a tangible sense. So let me explain that to you.
Sure.
If law firms were to just rest on their laurels, right, and they did nothing more than what they're doing right now, and they do nothing to further increase the rate of growth in the representation of partners of color, it will take nearly 27 more years for the representation of partners of color to reach parity with that of associates today. And by that, I mean that 27 more years before partners of color reach 31% of all partners. And the conversion rate of associates to partner equalizes between white lawyers and lawyers of color, right? 27 more years. And that's at this historically large year-over-year gain, right? Most years when I do that calculation, it comes out to be much longer time frame, right? And I don't know about you, Scott, but I don't want to be talking about this for 27 years. I won't even tell you how old I'll be in 27 years, right? That's why I call it abysmal progress. It is progress, and I think it's important that we acknowledge that, but it's still abysmal and we need to do better.
Yeah, thank you, Nakaya. Danielle, the report also highlights some areas of concern in the summer associate data. Can you walk through those trends and what they might indicate?
Sure, Scott. So I touched on one of these a little bit earlier, and that was that decline that we observed this year in terms of women's representation within the summer associate data. That was that first decline in 11 years. But again, I'm not too worried about that just yet. I do think we need to see at least one more year of data there. Where I think there is a bigger area of concern when it comes to some of the data by race, ethnicity. So overall, there was a net increase in the percentage of summer associates of color this year. But when we disaggregate that data a little bit further, we find that that increase was being primarily driven by an increase in the representation of Asian summer associates and to a lesser extent in the increased representation of multiracial summer associates. For Black summer associates, in contrast, they actually saw a net decline this year of 1.5 points. And that's a very large decrease to see in any one given year. And it's actually the second year in a row now where there's been a decrease in the percentage of Black summer associates. So that's a little concerning now that that's become a trend within the data. Also in 2024, if we look at the data for Latinx, Native American, and Native Hawaiian other Pacific Islander summer associates, their representation was essentially flat this year in the data. So I think anytime we're seeing stagnation or declines within the data, that's an area where we want to keep a close eye on, because if those are longer term trends and patterns, that will eventually show up in the associate data and then longer term within the partnership data as well.
Thank you, Danielle. And Nakaya, can you talk a little bit more about the declining representation of Black and African American summer associates? What do you think is contributing to that drop over the last few years?
Yeah, so this is the second year in a row that we've seen that decline in the representation of Black and African American summer associates, right? And it does give me pause. As a general matter, and Danielle said this, I really caution against trying to draw too many conclusions from changes in the data over just 1 or 2 years, right? These short-term fluctuations, because they are just as likely to be caused by something that's benign as something that's insidious, right? However, that said, this current downward trend that we're seeing coincides with this larger shift in the national discourse on diversity that we were talking about, in this rising backlash to initiatives that are designed to increase the representation of Black and African American individuals in particular. It's also coinciding with data from NALP's Jobs and JD's report, which showed that the overall employment rates for Black graduates in the class of 2023 sharply declined compared to the class of 2022. And that was despite the fact that the class of 2023 had the highest overall employment rates we've ever seen. You know, and there's this saying that coincidence doesn't equal causation, which is true. But this situation still bears paying close attention to because of what's happening on the national stage. If the decline continues, as Danielle said, it really could soon affect the representation of Black associates and possibly even the demographics of the profession as a whole.
Right. And Danielle, what other findings have you seen in the report that you'd like to highlight for our listeners?
Yeah, so far, we've been focusing a lot on the data by gender as well as race, ethnicity. But within the report itself, we also include data on LGBTQ lawyers and military veterans, and also that data on lawyers with disabilities. One of the other really interesting pieces of data that we've been finding in the report over the last several years is this increased representation of both LGBTQ associates and summer associates. For a long time, the needle was moving very slowly in terms of their representation as well. But over the last 5 years in particular, since 2019, within both the associate and summer associate figures, those have just about doubled over that time period, now with about 8% of associates, about 13% of summer associates identifying as LGBTQ. And along the same lines, we've been seeing this increase in the overall graduate data as well, although even there, the percentages are a little bit higher at about 15% for the class of 2023.
Great. And are there any other new research reports that NALP members should be aware of? Any additional surveys open at the moment that our listeners can participate in?
Yeah, Scott, we actually have a number of new reports that either have just recently been released or we're preparing to publish within the next few weeks. So the first one I'd love to highlight is our Perspectives on 2024 Law Student Recruiting Report. We just released that in mid-March. And that report provides a very comprehensive analysis of the 2024 recruiting season for summer associate programs that'll be starting in just a few months now at law firms for the 2025 summer. And this year's report in particular really detailed all of the changes that happened last year in recruiting. For the first time, OCI was not the primary vehicle that firms were using to recruit students. And along with that change, we also saw offers happening much earlier within the recruiting cycle and the recruiting cycle extending longer because of that. So anyone involved in recruiting, I would certainly encourage them to take a look at this year's report. In addition, in late March, we'll be releasing the results of our 2024 lateral hiring survey, which shows that rebound in the lateral hiring market that happened last year. And then in April, we're really excited to be releasing our inaugural Canadian Associate Salary Survey report. This is a new survey we just launched earlier this year that will provide a comprehensive look at associate compensation across Canada, as well as summer student and articling student compensation.
That's great. And good job on all your research, Danielle. And Nakia, let me ask you this. I know Danielle mentioned people in the recruiting team should read this data. Who else within firms do you think should read this? Maybe somebody in NALP is a member, but maybe somebody that is in a leadership role isn't as familiar with this. Who else within the firms should see this information?
Oh, gosh, Scott, I think this information is critical to everyone in the firm. If you are in a leadership role, if you are making decisions, you need data. And our research provides the data that you need to make informed decisions. So I would say everyone from managing partners to heads of HR, they all need to know this information.
That's great. So anybody that's listening to this, if you're a staff member, send this information to those people in your firm. They need to see that. And one final question, Nakia, what do you say to NALP members right now who are struggling to respond to all these national developments in the last few weeks?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, Scott, because it's a really important question. I think the last few weeks have been incredibly challenging for the entire NALP community for a variety of reasons, right? And I think the next few weeks and months are going to bring even more challenges. And it's incredibly important to me, to the NALP staff, to the NALP board of directors, that our members know that NALP is committed to supporting them and helping them navigate whatever is happening in the world. And I encourage our members to stay connected to the NALP community through things like NALP Connect, our section meetings, social media, this podcast, and of course, our annual education conference coming up next month, which we're very, very excited to be in Cleveland for. And I want to recognize that for some members of the NALP community, these challenges that are going on are not just with their work, but they're attacking who they are as individuals. And that's incredibly difficult. And it's something we see and recognize. And for those individuals, I want to affirm that we value them as members of our community. And I want to remind everyone in the NALP community that NALP also has resources to support them if they're struggling in this moment. And I encourage everyone to tap into those. And that includes our Bulletin Plus and webinar archives, which are full of programming on personal well-being, as well as our affinity groups, which are open to everyone. And then lastly, Scott, I'll just say that it is an absolute privilege to be part of this NALP community and to do the work we do. And so I'll thank all of our members for that.
That's great. Thank you both for doing such a great job in the association and really making that kind of difference for a whole industry. And thank you again for being here today on the podcast. And we'll see you in Ohio in a few weeks at the conference.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Great. Thank you, Scott.